When we talk about infrastructure development in the state, we hear this not only from what's happening in Victoria, but we hear it equally from the other states of Australia. We hear it from the private sector industry, who's actually developing their own infrastructure assets around mining. The delivering timetables that we actually have within our plans to upgrade Victorian infrastructure, what do you think is the timing dilemma that face those? Is that a real issue?
Good question, Bill. There's two steps to it. I mean, the first one is you've got to get your methodology right of infrastructure. Yes, you need the skills. Yes, you need the plans. Yes, you need the finances for it. But one of the areas where we traditionally have not been strong is the concept is announced, and then we move forward and suddenly find it's announced, and then you run into the dilemma of cost overruns, or it's behind time or over budget. So the first step that we have brought in this state a few years ago is a gateways process in our Treasury, where we try with rigour at each step to go through six particular steps to see whether the project is ready, so that when we as a state actually announce it, we can have a lot more confidence that of the budget, of the scope and of the timelines. So one, we need our own rigour in place, and I think we have again a certainly an Australian leading methodology with gateways on that. But secondly, the challenge for us is, well, you've got to prioritise the right things. What are they? And once you've done that, you have to deliver them. But again, we have some skill shortages. We're seeking to address that through our training system. And again, there's no shortage of private sector finance wanting to assist us in building any of these. But it's really, we need the methodology right, and we've worked on that, and then we need to prioritise them and go ahead with them.
Thank you.
Ian Ferris, Treasury Corporation, also wearing a hat as a member of a hospital board in Victoria. Treasurer, your comment about the ageing of the population and the need for changes there. In the hospital system, there's huge issues in terms of both doctors and nurses in terms of the ageing and the lack of replacements. So I just wondered if you had some thoughts about where the state can do more to actually encourage longer staying in the system and perhaps retraining. You talked about that earlier. My second question is in regard to the GST payments, and I wondered whether the New South Wales and Victoria shouldn't be taking the line that, in fact, all of the GST raised in each state should really come back to that state, and that all questions of equalisation between states for long distances and geographical problems should be settled by the federal budget outside the GST.
On the second one first, Ian, the Grants Commission is meant to do those things to try and adjust. I mean, the starting point of us is we have no particular issue about a subsidy from large states of the Northern Territory, Tasmania, South Australia. We do have an issue with Queensland, Western Australia and ACT. The problem with the Grants Commission settling it is, I mean, the Grants Commission's speed makes plate tectonics look positively reckless. I mean, it moves at such a slow speed. So, I mean, it is seeking to address these issues, but it moves incredibly slowly. So your issue with the federal budget adjusting it is certainly an area that would warrant, I think, serious consideration. But I think that the premise, well, we have a great grievance that we don't get enough back. It is not a grievance at those small jurisdictions. It is a grievance at the resource states and the ACT, which is the most affluent part of Australia. Regarding the ageing and hospitals, I guess the challenge in any workforce, and every employer finds this, well, what do you do to keep your skilled workforce in place? There's a number of tools that you have. Certainly more flexible hours of work, more flexible conditions, a range of those things will always assist in people remaining in the workforce longer than they otherwise would if full-time employment is not their preferred option. The other thing clearly is recruitment. And again, we had a large nurses recruitment campaign some years ago. We had a large doctors recruitment campaign not so long ago. And some of those, whether they be the medical training facilities, where we've been seeking to work in collaboration and have with the Commonwealth on that more recently, and similarly some of the nurse training issues which probably could be better resolved. So it's multifaceted. It has to be what you can do to keep a workforce flexible, because often it is the inflexibility in a workforce which drives people out. But secondly, how can we target early enough and train people for those positions? So it's multifaceted, but I think we are on a path to it. But I don't think there is a single profession or area of employment anymore where there appears to be a glut of personnel. We just seem to be, it's this high labour force participation, growing economy. It seems to be soaking up all our skills.
Thank you. Additional questions from the floor, anybody? I've got another one, but I'm hoping that you'll have one first. Thank you. From the microphone on our right.
Thank you, Chairman. John Allen, independent consultant. Treasurer, if you look at your role as leader of an economy the size of Victoria on a world scale, what other economic units around the world do you look at in terms of benchmarking?
John, we're an economy the size of Israel, Ireland, Singapore. They're all sort of fairly equivalent economies to us. Benchmarking, I guess what do you want to benchmark yourself on? I mean, on some areas, on capacity to expose yourself to trade. I mean, Singapore is clearly a place where you would look at. If you're looking at innovation, particularly in some of our arid industries and IT and medical, you would clearly look to somewhere like Israel. But I guess we'd like to benchmark ourselves on depending what particular area of government we're looking at. So, for example, in education, you know, we are one of the top five performing countries in the world by the international measures of education. So you will look to somewhere like Finland, which is right at the top, and actually say, well, what do they do that is better than us and what can we learn from it? And so effectively we do benchmark ourselves against the best in what we are seeking to do in government to how we can improve. So I guess we'll continue to look, and it's a global economy, that there are a number of models we can look at, but certainly those three I mentioned, I mean, Ireland's probably assisted by the fact that it had quite a lot of euros coming in as part of the European Union, but Singapore and Israel in particular are two jurisdictions that have performed extraordinarily well on the skills of their people and the innovation that arises from it.
Treasurer Tony Peake from PricewaterhouseCoopers. One of the trends that tends to be the case for long-serving governments in Western democracies is that the size of government grows over time. And we've seen in the federal election campaign Kevin Rudd talking about the fact that, you know, he's even used the phrase razor gang, I think, approach to looking at the federal bureaucracy. As a government that's been in power for a period of time now, how do you strike that balance between, you know, providing greater service delivery and more staff in frontline services, and whilst at the same time making sure you don't sort of become bloated over time?
Yeah. It's a challenge of any long-serving government, and I guess we've been in government 8 years now, so it seems a short time to me, but I'm sure to some, particularly in the opposition, it seems an awful long time. The challenge, I guess, is one of the most effective ways we operate in our own internal structures is, so if we have at our budget cabinet time, a minister wants to come forward with a proposal, for example, of new policy, new initiative. There is always some capacity in government to fund new programs, and the competition for that is extraordinarily high for any available extra resource. Now, the most logical one being, you know, health CPI is just so extraordinary above and beyond normal CPI that essentially soaks up such a large amount of any extra revenue government gets through growth and the like. So in response to your question, the most effective way of reprioritising and refreshing yourself is, if a minister has a new proposal or program, inevitably that has a far greater chance of success in getting government support if it is actually offset against another program that is not as fresh, not as relevant, not as dynamic. Now, individual ministers having to effectively make those choices on reprioritisations within their own areas mean that there is far less likelihood of that bloating in government, which can be a phenomenon, than it would otherwise be. Because if in the end it is a finite amount of money, and yes, you know, departmental budgets will generally be indexed to CPI, but and new issues emerge and then the reprioritisation comes in. It's been an interesting process as we go through, for instance, the issues of droughts and bushfires, where in government we always seek to departments to say, well, where can you tighten your belt to meet this new need? And it is amazing how we always manage to find an ability to tighten our belt to do so. So that's probably the biggest internal discipline in government, to remove that bloated government sort of syndrome or phenomena that you need to reprioritise all the time. So that essentially is the rigour that we need to apply to ourselves, and I think it is. And also in this government, we've also had an extraordinary change. We had the smoothest of transitions that I certainly can recall in political history from one Premier to another. And I guess what's almost gone unnoticed is we've been in government 8 years, and 13 of the 21 people who sit around the Cabinet table, including myself, were not sitting around the Cabinet table when we first came into government. And there's been an extraordinary refreshing of the government, both at the election when Premier Brax reshuffled his cabinet and after the Premier and Deputy Premier retired and we had two more. So there's been a fair reinvigoration within government during the life of a medium-term government.
Thank you. One more question over here, if you're right. This is the last one, I'm sorry.
Ben Barnett from the NAUS Group. Treasurer, I was wondering if you could comment on the role of innovation as a priority in the short term for the Victorian government, and also detailing more specifically what ways you see the Victorian government offering targeted assistance to stimulate that innovation within Victoria.
Innovation, I guess we have a Minister for Innovation with a capital I. So, I mean, innovation is clearly one of the objectives that John Brumby in particular as Premier has. He was very passionate about that portfolio being created some years ago. And the history, I guess, of it is how do you get the best and brightest? How do you bring that in place? The synchrotron in a historical sense is a fairly much a symbol of a big investment that encourages innovation, encourages our best and brightest to stay and feeds into the economy of the state. But in a more immediate sense, we've had our science technology initiative in place, which gives a government a good opportunity to leverage upon what is happening in the private sector, in the research sector, on the issues of innovation. But innovation is also has to be a state of mind as well as a formal segment of the economy. Innovation is not just in science and technology. Innovation also is in how you operate government. Innovation is also in how you deliver services. As an illustration, when I was Education Minister, one of the things that struck me was, again, we have 1,594 government schools in the state. They are areas where the resource is patchy, how it's used. In some cases, these are used 7 days a week and quite effectively. In other cases, they are used literally 9 to 4, 5 days a week for 40 days a year at the most extreme, 40 weeks a year at the most extreme. So innovation in how you think in government means, well, how can you leverage off that government land so that communities actually use that resource 7 days a week, you know, 16, 18 hours a day for sport, for cultural pursuits, for whatever other reason. So in a formal sense, it's issues like the synchrotron, it's like the STI leveraging of what's in place, but also in a mindset, it is how can we do things better in this state to give us a niche that we might otherwise not have, an advantage we might otherwise not have. So in both a small I and a capital I, it's high on our agenda.